I'll be talking about fruit growth in Apple and some of the work that we've been doing over the last few years in terms of understanding some of the key molecular players that are involved in this process. It's actually been already reiterated several times this morning by Todd and Greg that cell production and expansion are really key factors that control fruit growth and or that facilitate fruit growth, really speaking. And in case of Apple, if you kind of take a look at what's happening from around bloom time right here all the way through petal fall, early fruit development, and towards the mature fruit, there's a lot of transitions in terms of cell production and expansion that are taking place. Early on, in case of apples, there is a very rapid increase in the number of cells, so there's very extensive cell production that is going on. But this usually lasts for about several weeks, three weeks or so after bloom, and after that, there is not really a whole lot of an increase in terms of the cell number itself. Cell expansion, on the other hand, if you simply look at this particular line here, it kind of looks like much of the cell expansion is really taking place towards the later stages of fruit development. It's kind of a little bit misleading, and that's kind of one point that I wanted to make. Even if you look at what's happening early on right here, a period where much of this growth seems to be associated with extensive cell production, you do in fact see quite a bit of an increase in cell size as well. There is a significant amount of cell expansion that is going on simultaneously. And this is not just the case with apples. Pretty much any fruit system that you looked at, for example, Todd mentioned this too, there is quite a bit of expansion going on. Same is the case with olives and so on. So it's kind of a little bit misleading to suggest that at one particular stage, cell division is the primary regulator of growth. That is not necessarily true. Now, if you kind of, if you want to understand fruit development completely, you have to go, as Todd mentioned, beyond bloom time itself or before bloom time. And if you kind of take a look at what happens within apples during this period, during bud break and the pre-bloom time, there is quite a bit of growth that does occur. Not quite as extensive as you would expect with cherries, but there is a significant amount of increase in cell number that does take place, to the point where when you reach bloom, there's actually a cessation of growth. Okay, there's a temporary cessation of growth, and this is actually associated with a temporary cessation of cell production as well. And pollination and fruit set again reactivate that cell production process. Early fruit growth, you again have very extensive amount of cell production that is taking place, a fair amount of cell expansion as well, as I mentioned before. And then towards the mid to late stages of fruit growth, you have a transition away from cell production, more towards cell expansion and so on. And our hypothesis has been that there are a variety of factors that regulate these transitions in cell production and expansion. And broadly, what we have done is kind of classified them into three groups. Some developmental signals, obviously ones which are allowing the transitions developmentally to take place. There is definitely, in my opinion, quite a bit of phytohormone signaling that is going on in this whole process. And the availability of carbohydrates, as has been well documented by several different researchers, is also a very key factor that contributes to this process. The problem, though, is that we don't really understand how these components, how these different factors, intrinsic as well as probably some extrinsic factors, how they really control these particular transitions. And our research has been trying to address this to some extent, primarily by trying to identify some of the molecular components of this regulatory mechanism. We have taken several different approaches to understand this. One of the hypotheses that we came up with is that if you're looking at cell production and expansion during fruit development, there are a variety of transitions that are taking place, as I mentioned before. And if a gene is presumably involved in regulating those transitions, you would expect to see changes in the expression of that gene during different stages of flower development as well as fruit development. And the other hypothesis was that if you had treatments that altered fruit growth, like for example treatments that altered treatments such as reduction in fruit growth that would alter fruit size, or treatments such as shading which would also affect fruit growth, you would actually these treatments would presumably affect cell production and expansion as well, and that would also have an effect on the expression of some of these molecular factors. So with these hypotheses, we started looking at a variety of different genes, and one of the first things that we did was actually start looking at the cell cycle genes, and this is something that Todd referred to a little earlier. Just to kind of refresh your memory a little bit, what you're looking at here is basically the cell cycle. Four different phases of the cell cycle. You have the G1 phase, which is a gap phase, where much of the cell growth takes place. You have the S phase, where DNA replication occurs, followed by a small G2 phase, where again a gap phase, where there's any correction to or DNA damage repair is essentially done. And then you have the mitotic phase, where cell division occurs, and at the end of this you basically end up with two cells which can re-enter the cell cycle or exit the cell cycle itself, or in case of, like, let's say for example cherries, what they can do is that they can go through an endoreduplication process, where really at this particular point they literally skip the mitotic phase and they simply go from this G2 phase back to a G1. So really speaking, they have twice the amount of DNA, and that kind of can occur over multiple cycles, and that's what endoreduplication is about. And we had previously shown, Peter and I had previously shown, that that's not common in case of apples, but it does occur in one of the mutants, one of the spores. Now, the cell cycle machinery is actually pretty complicated. It involves a variety of different factors. Cyclins and cyclin-dependent kinases are considered to be among the key ones. But there are also a couple of interesting ones, like for example, this particular gene right here is a KIP-related protein, or a KRP, and this one is considered to be a negative regulator of cell production, of the cell cycle, primarily because it can actually interact with cyclins and cyclin-dependent kinases directly, and thereby inhibit their activity. When we first did this, we looked at, you know, the whole complex, number of cell cycle genes from apple, and what we identified were basically about 19 different genes which were associated with cell production. And among them, KRPs were the ones which were negatively associated with cell production. If you take a look at the expression levels of the KRP genes, one of the things that you can notice with two of these KRPs, KRP4 and 5, is primarily that their expression, what you're basically looking at is here the expression during different stages of fruit development. And what you can notice pretty clearly is that there is, towards this point where there's actually a transition from cell production to expansion, there's actually an increase in the expression of these genes. Okay, and we also did some of this work looking at what effect shading has on the expression of these genes, and again we find that shading, which reduces fruit growth and reduces cell production and expansion to some extent, results actually in an increase in the expression of these negative regulators of cell production, which is kind of consistent with their roles in terms of regulating organ growth. Now, what we wanted to do additionally with this was to also functionally characterize this, and the way we did this was by taking the apple KRP genes and expressing them in Arabidopsis, and to basically determine whether they were truly negative regulators of cell production. And what we find is that the phenotype that we get from expressing the apple KRP genes in Arabidopsis is very consistent with the overexpression of the native KRP gene in Arabidopsis. Let me go back here for a second. And if you kind of take a look at what is basically happening here, this is the wild type. This is basically an Arabidopsis plant expressing the KRP5 gene from apple. And you can kind of see this dramatic alteration of the shape of the leaf in terms of, you know, increased serration of the leaf margins. That is something that has been noted with the overexpression of KRP genes in native KRP genes in Arabidopsis. So what this basically shows is that these apple KRP genes are in fact negative regulators of cell production. Now, this was just one class of genes that we looked at. We were also very interested in looking at some of the other organ size regulating genes that have been previously identified in other crop systems, such as Arabidopsis primarily, but even in some fruits. One class of genes was basically the A integumenta genes. These are AP2 domain transcription factors. They have been demonstrated a long time back to be really strong factors regulating cell production and organ size in Arabidopsis. In addition to that, there have been a few other genes as well, such as the growth regulating factors and the growth regulating factor interacting factors, which are basically co-activated transcription factors, and they can together regulate the expression of multiple genes which are associated with cell production. There are some additional organ size regulators, for example, the ARGOS gene, which is an auxin-regulated gene involved in organ size, and a couple of fruit size specific related genes, one of which Greg already mentioned, which was the FW2.2, which was initially identified in tomato, And then subsequently it has been shown that this particular gene is also an important factor regulating organ size, even in corn, and recently even in physalis, which a paper came out earlier this year. In addition to that, there is CLUE, which if you kind of take a look backwards at CLUE, it's Hulk. So you can kind of imagine what that gene actually does. This is basically a cytochrome P450 gene, and Esther van der Naap's lab recently showed that CLUE is also involved in regulating fruit size in tomatoes. It was initially identified, though, in Arabidopsis. We started looking at some of these genes. Integumenta is something that we have looked at in the past, but recently we have started looking at some of the cell number regulated genes as well. Just to kind of show you some of the data with ANT1, ANT1 expression is kind of consistent with regulation of cell production, does show higher expression during early stages of fruit development and a marked reduction in its expression during the later stages. Thinning or crop load reduction in fruit load seems to actually increase the expression of this gene early on, and shading, which would reduce the extent of cell production, actually results in a reduction of expression of this ANT1 gene. So all of this is kind of consistent with a role for ANT1 in terms of negative, in terms of positively regulating cell production. With the CNR genes, this is kind of some recent work that we have done. This is kind of, as I mentioned, a class of genes which was associated with fruit size initially in tomato as FW2.2, and as Amy mentioned, there are at least two different alleles for this. And we kind of tried to identify the CNR genes from apple. There's a whole bunch of them, as it turns out. But we kind of focused our efforts on a small group of them, which are shown here in yellow. And the closest one to the tomato one is actually a CNR8. But what we actually found after we looked at the expression of many of these genes is that CNR5, which is actually close to a peach CNR20, which I believe is co-localized to a fruit size QTL in peaches. But in any case, CNR5 was the one which showed some interesting expression patterns. As I mentioned, CNR is one of its alleles is considered to be a negative regulator of cell production, and you can kind of see that during the early stages of fruit development, there is actually a very significant reduction in the expression of this gene. And at the transition between cell production and expansion is when the expression of this gene starts picking up, which is kind of consistent with its proposed role. Again, when we looked at the effects of reduced fruit load or the effects of shading, what we again observe is that when you have a reduced fruit load, there's increased amount of cell production that is going on, but since CNR is, at least this particular CNR is a negative regulator, or could be a negative regulator of cell production, you actually see a reduction in its expression. On the other hand, when you have a period, when you have treatments which reduce the extent of cell production, like with shading, you actually notice that the expression of this particular gene is actually significantly higher. Okay. One of the things that is often kind of overlooked is the contribution of cell expansion to fruit growth, even though cell expansion is really a big component of fruit growth. We know very little about the different genes that actually control this particular process. We started looking at a couple of different classes of genes that are associated with cell expansion. COBRA and COBRA-like genes are thought to be associated with directional cell expansion in Arabidopsis, presumably by defining the orientation of the cellulose microfibrils itself. Expansins are known to cause cell wall loosening by breaking the linkages between cellulose and the cross-linking glycans. And as such, they can also affect cell growth. And when we looked at one of these COBRA genes, it was kind of interesting that its expression pattern was kind of consistent with cell expansion, in that during later stages of fruit development is when its expression really picks up, and reduction of fruit load seems to temporarily lower its particular expression, or transiently lower its expression, all of which is kind of consistent with the potential role for this in regulating cell expansion. Interestingly, this particular COBRA gene is very close to the CLUE gene in terms of its genomic location. This is actually the same thing in case of tomatoes as well. There seems to be this microcentenary between tomato and apple, which are presumably very far apart, but you kind of, in that particular region, you actually notice that CLUE as well as this COBRA gene are kind of seem to be together, and this pattern may mean something in my opinion. Okay, so based on this work, we have actually developed a working model of fruit growth regulation in Apple, and what we basically have is some amount of an understanding that cell production and expansion factors that mediate fruit growth. Some of the cell cycle regulatory factors are contributing to the regulation of cell production. Presumably, genes such as some of these organ size regulators, such as the cell number regulator or A integumenta, are influencing this the cell cycle genes itself, and thereby affecting cell production. It's also possible that there may be an indirect or a direct effect rather of these genes on cell production, which bypasses the cell production the cell cycle genes itself. In terms of cell expansion, at least we have some feeling that some of the COBRA genes or the expansion genes might be associated with cell expansion. What we think is that all these intrinsic factors such as developmental signals or phytohormones or carbohydrates, they may be influencing these different components of fruit size regulation. How that happens is something that is still very unclear in my opinion, and that's kind of why you have question marks and a lot of these dotted lines that I've shown. Now, what I wanted to do in the next couple of minutes that I have left is kind of talk a little bit about the future research needs. I kind of strongly believe that what we need to do is more of tissue-specific analysis, and we need to kind of look at it. Look at cell production and expansion in a more tissue-specific sort of a manner. We need to do the same thing with gene expression studies, and we need to have ways in which we can try and start relating fruit metabolism with growth. I think that is something that has been very strongly lacking in especially with tree fruits. This has been something that has actually been done to quite an extent in tomatoes, but really not very little has been done in case of apples or with other tree fruits. I think it's also important to try and link phytohormone biosynthesis and signaling to this whole process. But more importantly, all this has to be, in my opinion, done in a very tissue-specific manner. And I kind of stress this because apple is kind of pretty complex in terms of its composition. There is definitely the fruit cortex that is the majority of the bulk of what we consume, but there is a very significant part of it which is actually the pith. And if you kind of, this is actually a work that was done by an undergraduate student in my lab, and one of the things that he basically did was pick 20 different apple varieties and measured the pith size across these varieties, and what we see is that there's at least a twofold variation. So the pith is actually a pretty big component of fruits. And we have also done some work in the past where we have tried using laser capture microdissection and separated the pith and the cortex at different stages of flower and fruit development, and we kind of noticed that there is differential gene expression. So it's really important, if you want to understand what these genes do, it is really important to actually try and figure out where it is that these genes are actually expressed and how it is that their expression changes during different periods of development in different parts of the fruit itself. Okay. And finally, I think we also need to do more functional analysis of candidate genes, and in order to be able to extrapolate these or to kind of make use of it in a more practical sense, we need to actually find some functional polymorphisms, and research in my lab is kind of moving a little more towards that particular direction. I wanted to acknowledge the contributions of several different people. Dr. Madhumita Dash, who was a graduate student in my lab who did a lot of the initial work with A integumenta and so on. Lisa was my technician, as well as a master's student who did a lot of the work with the KRPs. Shan is, she's in the audience today, and she is the one who's doing a lot more work with the different fruit size regulating genes. And Mark was the undergraduate student who also contributed quite a bit to this particular project. Okay. So that's what I have for today. Any questions? We have time for maybe just one before the next speaker comes in. Kenna. So the question was whether we have ever used any apple spores to look at differences in fruit size. Is that? Okay, so yeah, we did a while back when I was a graduate student with Peter. We did look at one particular sport in apple. It was actually two sports. It was Grand Gala and Big Red Gala, and we did some preliminary work looking at what is the basis of that difference. Much of that work was in terms of looking at differences in cell production, expansion, and, as it turns out, end of reduplication. We did very preliminary molecular work trying to see whether there were any differences in gene expression. We did not. What we looked at were probably a handful of genes, and we did not see much of a difference in the expression of those genes. But at that point, it was a very initial sort of a study, and I have not gone back to look at that in any greater detail. Peter maybe has done a little bit of now. Not really. But that is kind of an option. We do have spores that have differences in fruit size, and it would definitely be a very good opportunity to use them to understand some of this process. Okay? All right.